Because we are in the temple of Lord Shringadeva, I thought I was thinking while singing in the beginning, I was thinking maybe I should say a few words about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's relationship with Lord Shringadeva, and then start from there and see wherever this talk will lead us. So, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are several times descriptions of the relationship that Lord Chaitanya had with Lord Nrisimhadeva. One was on Nrisimha Chaturdasi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whenever it was the appearance day of a great personality or of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, would get deeply absorbed in that particular event. On Jamastami, for example, he got into the mood of a cowherd boy and would even dress up and was challenged by Nityananda to show that he was really a cowherd boy and whether he could throw a stick as proof. Which he then did, you know, with great expertise. In relation to Lord Nrisimhadeva, on Nrisimha Chaturdasi, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got into the mood of Lord Nrisimhadeva. He had that very ferocious type of spirit of Lord Nrisimhadeva, and it got so intense that people started running away and some people climbed in trees or in fear. And then when he saw all the fear that it caused, then he came back to external consciousness. And because he was getting so absorbed in that mood of Nrisimhadeva, he became Nrisimhadeva. In this way, the Lord was showing how in a way he is non-different from Lord Nrisimhadeva. He was also showing how a devotee relates to Lord Nrisimhadeva. After all, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is by Kavi Karnapur identified as Bhakti Rupa. Srila Kavi Karnapur quoted that verse, Pancha Tattvamakam Krishnam Bhakti Rupa Sarupakam Bhakta Avatar Bhakta Kyam Namami Bhakti Shaktikam, which identifies the various members of the Pancha Tattva. And it is that verse comes up for the first time in the Gauraganadesh Deepika, which is a book written by Kavi Karnapur. The book also gives background who is who, which associates of Lord Chaitanya, what role they played in the pastimes of Krishna. But also in this Gauraganadesh Deepika, the Pancha Tattva is defined, and that is interesting. Actually, Kavi Karnapur is saying that the verse was originally composed by Sarup Damodara Goswami and was in his diary, which is now lost. And that he actually got it from there. So there Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described as Bhakta Rupa, or the Lord in the form of a devotee. And that of course is our understanding. We know that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching by example as a devotee. So when we look upon the relationship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Lord Nrisimhadeva, then we are getting an example of how he dealt with Nrisimha Chaturdasi, very deeply getting absorbed, really focusing on the Lord completely. So that element is there. A few other times that Lord Nrisimhadev appears in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is there is the story of Nrisimhananda Brahmachari, who was a very advanced devotee, and he said that he was, well, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had promised the devotees from Bengal that he would come to Bengal. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at the time was staying in Puri. So every year the devotees were coming for Ratha Yatra, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, next year you don't have to come. You don't have to come. I will come to Bengal. So everyone was very excited, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't show up. So everyone was quite disturbed about that. But then Nrisimhananda Brahmachari said, no, I will bring him. And he was in his mind making a path for the Lord to walk on, but the Lord did not go any further than Kanai Natashala. After that, he stopped, which is sort of just on the border of Bihar, practically still Bengal. Anyway, but there's a story about the deities, and that he was making offerings to his deities, and he had deities of Gornitai, Nrisimhadev, I think also. Is Jagannath also there? Anyway, the point was that he made offerings for the deities, and that he saw in his meditation that the deities of Gornitai ate all the offerings. And he said, oh, what misfortune. I mean, they have eaten everything. I mean, there's nothing left for Nrisimhadev. And he cooked again for Lord Nrisimhadev. Again, yeah. So, of course, the story is there to show that there is no difference. Right? Not that there are separate deities and separate lords. No, that's the same Lord. And therefore, so in this way, Chaitanya Charitamrita also established there is no difference between Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nrisimhadev. Another occasion when Lord Nrisimhadev comes up is when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Simhachalam. And there he offered prayers. Ugram Viram Mahavishnu Chalantam Sarvato Mukam Nrisimham Visanam Bhadram Ritchum Ritchum Namo Mayam, which we chant. But it was actually Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who was reciting those prayers. There were others that may not have been recorded, but it is it's very nice that that we follow what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually did. This verse also. Sina Singha, Jaina Singha, Jaya Jaina Singha, Praladesha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa. Why this verse? I said, well, it's a nice verse and we just chose one. No, it was chanted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, therefore, it's like on the wall, and therefore it is our verse. Very much so. So, in Simhachalam, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visits Lord Nrisimhadev, he's really worshipping Lord Nrisimhadev, and with that basically creating a foundation for the Nrisimhadev worship that we are performing today. Because the question can be asked, why would we worship Lord Nrisimhadev? I mean, one might say for protection, yeah, but Krishna protects. So many demons are killed by Krishna. So why do we separately need to turn to Lord Nrisimhadev? We could just say Krishna protects us because He did. He does. In so many ways. He protected the residents of Vrindavan again and again. So stay with Krishna. I mean, we are Krishna bhaktas. Why would we turn anywhere else? Only Krishna, isn't it? But there is no difference. That is established in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then we see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was worshipping Lord Nrisimhadev. Right, that sets the standard, actually. I like that very much, that upon studying the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we encounter many elements in his life that we find in our movement. For example, when Advaita Acharya for the first time realized that Nimai Pandit was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at that time he chanted Namo Brahmane Devaya Go Brahmane Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha, and he kept on repeating that mantra. Well, that mantra is now very much also a fundamental mantra in our spiritual life. It is also something we chant whenever we are offering bhoga, we are chanting that mantra. So every day we are chanting that mantra, remembering Krishna as Govinda, as the protector of the brahmanas, of the cows and the brahmanas. So like that, we are seeing that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not just the one who inaugurated the chanting of Hare Krishna, and in that way inaugurated the Sankirtan movement, but also that he set the standards. And we see that the acharyas are simply carrying forward the same standards. And therefore, the identity of our movement is becoming very clear from the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, pastimes and teachings, I must say. So that to me is one reason why I think the Chaitanya Charitamrita is very important. I think that if a devotee in our movement doesn't read it, then I think we're missing out something essential, something. Because then we will not understand our identity. If we just turn to, if we read the Bhagavad Gita and we begin with Bhagavatam, and then we pick up some stories from here and there, that's incomplete. But the Chaitanya Charitamrita has been described as the postgraduate study. Bhagavad Gita is preliminary, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam is graduate, and then Chaitanya Charitamrita is postgraduate. So naturally one thinks, well, you know, postgraduate level, I may never get there. And so a lot of people never get there. But in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we particularly find our identity as Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Right? We really see how a Gaudiya Vaishnava is living his life of bhakti. We're speaking about culture. We just did our tour of Bangladesh, and everyone who went on that tour, which was like, we covered the whole country. It was a very intense journey in many ways. Everyone who went on that tour is still digesting it. Me too. And there were good moments, there were intense moments. And we were in Advaita's Acharya's birthplace, and some devotees had rats in their mosquito net, just to give an example of how it got exciting at moments. When we were going on the way to Rupa Sanatan's birthplace, we had to cross some water by boats, and one boat sunk with the devotees inside.
Definitely,
there were exciting moments in our tour. But when I said digesting it, it's not just that. Digesting it in the sense that we connected with another aspect of the culture of surrounding Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that was very, very nice. Of course, in some ways, we see that culture revealed in Sri Dhammayapur, and then we understand that Bengal is the area, the Goda Mandal, which surrounds Sri Dhammayapur. And when we came, immediately, there was the Bengali kitchen with all the preparations from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, all of them. Yeah. Banana flour, sabji, and you know, the different kinds of sak. And everything was there. So in one sense, we see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offers not only a amazing transcendental pastimes, transcendental pastimes that someone sometimes go completely beyond material considerations. We remember Srivas Thakur in his house, there was the kirtan going on, and his son died during the kirtan, and Srivas didn't care at all. You know, when some of the ladies were crying in the house, he was just saying, like, you know, be quiet, you know, you're disturbing the kirtan. He didn't want to disturb the kirtan in any way. So that's very transcendental. Really looking at the eternal and not at all touched by the temporary reality. So sometimes we see examples in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this very transcendental mood of completely on the spiritual platform and his devotees, same. And other times we find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita a cultural expression, which is very important, because without cultural expression, how are you going to live? Mankind, we need a certain range of activities to engage in. And these activities in this world, they come back again and again with regular intervals. Because life is repetitious. Every day the sun rises, every day the sun sets. Every night you go to sleep, every day you get up, like that. Right? So there's repetition in life. Every day again, right? Hungry, cooking, every day again, repetition. It goes on and on. So this is what we are experiencing. And culture means that there is an arrangement of regular activities which are favorable for spiritual life. That's real culture. There is so-called culture, right, which also means regulative activities or for degraded life. Right? But that is not culture. So true culture means that which elevates So we have that. We have all these activities that elevate. And then we, what Srila Prabhupada did, he did like a transplant. Right? He took the culture from Bengal, India, and just put Krishna consciousness in the West and gave the pure teachings of Srila Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and so on, and the entire Sampradaya. And then with it, some culture, Varnashram, and they're all living as, you know, somewhere situated in an ashram and so on. And then, I like to tell the story about Satsarup Maharaj when he was still Steve, who was the only one in the matchless gift storefront who was actually working. Yeah? And he had to work. And he had to work overtime during the lunch break. So that was bad, because that meant prasadam. Right? So he was very... he's like, he's going to miss prasadam. That was like quite serious. So they think, what to do? And his boss was insisting he had to work in lunchtime. So finally, he thought about it, and he concluded that there was no one in the temple who was capable of saving a plate of prasadam. He's thinking of everyone. He couldn't think of one person. So finally, he thought, the only one who can save me a plate of prasadam is Swamiji. So he rang up, and he got Swamiji on the phone. And he asked Swamiji, he said, Swamiji, don't mind, but I cannot come. I have to work today. And said, could you please save me a plate of prasadam? Prabhupada said, no problem. Yes, no, I will save you. Yes. So later he came, you know. Steve came and stood before Swamiji, and I was like, Swamiji, prasad. Swamiji goes, yes, yes. And he goes and he brings the plate of prasadam, and then he put it on the floor in front of him. And in Steve's mind, it was going, on the floor? I'm not a dog. But then he saw Prabhupada smiling, and then he realized, I'm such a rascal, you know. And he offered his obeisances to Prabhupada for the first time, because he felt so guilty. So it's a nice story that shows like how little by little Prabhupada was bringing in a culture, and how the culture was kind of slowly landing. Okay? Actually, me too, when I came to the Hare Krishna temple in the early days, when I first came to the Hare Krishna temple, everything was okay, you know. I could handle everything until they started to bow down to a plant. There it's going. Okay, and now we're going to bow down to a plant. That was just too much for my mind. It was like a plant, you know. Like, I couldn't, I mean, everything else all right. But you know, that was like, all right. That's good. So I'm sure everybody encounters something culturally that's like a little shocking. Right? That did it for me. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is also giving us the culture in which we can actually build a supportive lifestyle. The way we're living now in this transplanted form of Krishna consciousness is in a way difficult. We're living in a society which is based on ugra karma, horrible work meant to destroy the world of factories and technologies. Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam describes the factories as the dungeons of the demons, Right? And we're living in that world, and everything comes from that world. And then we're trying to be devotees in that world. And that's like, in a way, creating a lot of stress, because we have to do so many things that are not fitting to devotional life. I mean, you go and you work in your mundane environment, or it's like even, you know, sometimes I think of the traditional sannyasi and how nice it was. I mean, in my mind, you know, it sounds very nice, because it's, I thought, you'd go into the forest, and there you'd feel, you'd go really deep in your in personal bhaja, in the connection with the Supreme Lord, and then upon inspiration you go out of the forest to preach, and when it's enough, back in the forest. Now, you know, like, you get on a plane, and it's like, and it just, it's just happening, all the madness, and there's nothing you can do about it. You're on that plane, or on a tour, right, of so many places, so many temples. It's a totally different different lifestyle. I mean, I'm sure Bhaktivai Bhavanaj can relate to it, because he's even visited more temples than me, I think. Because Maharaj goes to Mongolia and places like Vladivostok and I don't know where. I've never been there. I go just a few places in Africa. Australia. Anyway, it's wild. So when we think about that, we're all living in a culture which is grounded in non-devotion, has non-devotional roots. Yeah. And then within that culture, all right, you know, we bring in transcendental activities. And but meanwhile, the material side of our life is not at all supporting. And that's difficult, very difficult. We're in cities. Ajamil was a qualified brahmana who somehow or other, due to seeing an inappropriate situation, as a low-class man and a low-class woman engaged in illicit activity, and it captures his mind and pulled him down. And Prabhupada is saying in one lecture on the topic, he's saying that if Ajamil, who was very qualified, right, if he fell down, then what is our chance in this age? It's a fact. We're living in a time where it's a crazy world, and there's lots of people very degraded doing all kinds of crazy things, and you see it all the time. It's in your face. Constantly, every day, so many pictures, so many things we see about illicit activities. So, anyway, the culture of Chaitanya Charitamrita is very rich, very rich. Going on pilgrimage, which we recently did, is something that reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita inspired me to do that. Right? Because I was reading about, sometimes you read about pastimes in places, and then gradually you develop a picture that of an area and a map begins to, when we are reading, a map begins to form. Yeah. The history takes shape. Things that took place at certain points in time, and the environment, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement appeared in. And So we went on a pilgrimage to Bangladesh, where there are many places related to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For example, there is the birthplace of Advaita Acharya, which is quite in the remote northeastern corner. You have to cross two rivers and then you get there to that remote place. Going to such places, naturally one is receiving blessings in these places. But one also is, because of the austerity that one performs in going there, one intensifies the meditation, which then, again, brings about a deeper relationship. One place, which is also in Bangladesh, which is just on the border with India, actually, is Benapole, and it's a famous place where Haridas Thakur was residing, and where that prostitute was sent by a landholder, Amachandra Khan, to make him fall down. And she came in the night, and so on. So, of course, Haridas was not at all distracted, and he was totally transcendental and never fell prey to the influence of lust. But that was not everything. The prostitute, she came, and Ramachandra Khan, who was paying her, had said, okay, you try and have union with him, and I sent my constable with you. Police constable means policeman, for those who don't know the word. I sent him with you, and then as soon as he is acting in an inappropriate way, then we'll arrest him, and then he'll be publicly dishonored. That was his plan. And the prostitute said, no. She said, no, first let me enjoy with him once, and then the second night I will take your constable. So that's interesting, because it showed that the prostitute went beyond professional interest. Yeah? It was not only about money, right? It was lust. So that prostitute, who's like the personification of lust, she also became transformed to a point where she also began to chant 300,000 names every day. I mean, that's a total transformation, complete, from like the grossest material platform to the topmost platform of love of God, because one cannot chant that number of rounds unless one is chanting in love. It's not possible. So that was kind of amazing. And I had long meditated on going to that place. And I think, like, well, what are we going to do there? So I had romanticized, and in my mind I was thinking, we're going to be there, and we're going to stay up the whole night and just chant, like Haridas was chanting the whole night. That was a nice idea. But anyway, the schedule didn't work like that at all, because it came at a certain time in our whole tour, and there was only 2 hours in the afternoon, and that was it. So then I thought, what are we going to do now? Well, we definitely have to chant japa here. We have to sit down and chant japa. That's obvious. That's obvious. And of course, I'd also thought before, like, well, what do you pray for? So, it's obvious that you're going to pray for taste in chanting, some things like that. Those would be the obvious things to pray for, that one might come to pure chanting of the name, that it may rise above offenses. These would all be like the expected prayers in a place dedicated to Haridas Thakur. But as we went to that place and we became more and more more and more absorbed in the pastime, I thought to myself, no, the first thing I'm going to pray for is to become completely free from any trace of lust. Because that's the real thing he did here. He showed that by his chanting completely transcended any influence of lust in this world. Let's pray for that. So sometimes we may connect through various places of pilgrimage with the personalities in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which then brings us deeper into a relationship with them. Someone asked me and said, why do you always speak about the Chaitanya Charitamrita? Why is it your favorite book? Well, one could give many answers to that, but the answer I gave at that time was because we're living in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That is the situation. That's where we are. We are in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, which is part of the same body of literature and is kind of giving a foundation for the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which then the Chaitanya Bhagavat is covering part of the pastimes and teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then the Chaitanya Charitamrita has its foundation based on what is there in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, and then expands into not only the later pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as it is described, but also like in the more deeper into the intimacy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message, why he really, what he's teaching. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Jaivadharma. In Jaivadharma is describing how the lotus of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes and teachings is gradually opening, little by little. So I like that metaphor a lot, because we're seeing that, how also in our own practical experience, also in the development of our movement, and gradually we can see that we need a culture, and if we can learn more about the culture related to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we'll have a movement which has more capacity to offer satisfaction. Vedic culture is also there. It is interesting how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his movement, is the it is Vaishnav culture. But then expressed in a particular way, as they do so in Bengal, with a lot of they're very warm people. Like, you know, the Bengalis are almost like the Italians of India. You know, it's like that's kind of what Bengalis are like. You know, and then that's like speaks for itself. You know, there's a lot of drama in Bengal, and you know, and there's like flavors and color, and it's there's a lot of enthusiasm in that movement. Yeah, it's like quite extrovert. You know, it's not like Vyada. But like our European cultures, and we could also do it in Dutch, but no one would understand. But same thing, you know, closed door and closed mind. You know? But Italy is different in Europe. So. Yeah. Bengal also very open like that, and very enthusiastic and colorful. That adds a flavor. To Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, quite festive. That flavor is very much our identity. So, if I think about Srila Prabhupada's attempt, Srila Prabhupada came into the West in 1965, 1966, his movement begins to take off, and in the middle of the hippie movement, and he begins to bring in more and more over the years, over time, more and more elements of Vaishnava culture and of the tradition, scriptures, and little by little it all takes shape. In the beginning it's all blue jeans, it's like getting up late, long hair, this, that, gradually. Okay, sorry, this, that. Prabhupada himself started to bring saris from India and so on. And, you know, as a sannyasi, he brings saris for all the girls. So Prabhupada, little by little, brought in culture. And then, what do we finally have? What did we have in 1977, and what do we have now? Well, if you analyze it, yes, a pure transcendental basis, the teachings and culture of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, some elements of Hari Bhakti Vilas in our practices, and then we have our own idea of Vaishnav culture, ISKCON culture, right? Which is another universe than traditional Bengali culture. Sometimes, that's why in India, sometimes traditional Gaudiya Vaishnavas have looked at us like, you know, what kind of Vaishnavas are they, right? Like, you know, when two devotees with tilak are both taking a rickshaw and start racing each other, with the rickshaw wallet in the back. The locals in Vrindavan are thinking, these guys are not sadhus. They're not sadhus. Or when some, when the American Sankirtan team, comes up to some holy kund and they start to do bombs, then again, the local babas are looking, these are not babas, in many ways, spiritually, culturally, the Chaitanya Charitamrita offers us an identity. An identity as sadhakas, as practitioners, and through following that, our eternal identity will be unfolded. And I could say much more on that topic, but time is also a factor. So, but a last point, and then I'd like ask a few questions. My last point is that yes, another reason why always the Chaitanya Charitamrita is based on a verse of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, which is Sri Krishna Chaitanya Daya Karaha Vichara Vichara Karita Chitta Bhava Chamatka. Saying that if we are interested in logic and argument, then one should apply it to understanding the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if one really applies one's intelligence to trying to understand the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then one's heart will become overwhelmed by feelings of amazement. One will be just amazed. So that is like a very important point, because without that mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not possible. Vrindavan, what a place. I joined in Vrindavan. Such a place. It just like, I couldn't resist it. It was so spiritual, so transcendental, so amazing. Stayed there for a long time. But also I realized more and more that I could not enter without mercy. And I realized I need the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Very, very much so. And I realized I may pray to Radha and Krishna, but who am I, right? Who am I to approach them? But if I pray to Gornita, they may hear me. They may hear me. Yeah. Even a case like me. Yeah. And then, of course, then I saw Srila Prabhupada, who was such a transparent devotee. It's very difficult to be a transparent devotee. Transparent means that one puts his own ideas aside and is just completely an instrument. And Prabhupada was so much the instrument of his own spiritual master, the previous acharyas of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So much the instrument of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his mercy that, yes, we understand. We go through Srila Prabhupada to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then, all right, then everything can be revealed to us. The entirety of the spiritual world. Where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta explains in the purports of the Brahma Samhita that half of Golok is where the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eternally take place, and the other half where the pastimes of Radha Krishna take place. Then we get the full realization. Our entrance is through the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As Narottam Das Thakur also explained. You can help there. Maybe one or two comments or questions, and then I'll end. Take it to greater heights. Yes.
Maybe this question is not very good, but I cannot somehow understand this simultaneously one and different. You said Lord Chaitanya is the Singhadev, but Singhadev is also a unique own personality in itself. Can you explain this topic? It's very difficult for me.
Very difficult for me also. In fact, I was thinking about Advaita Acharya, because at the moment this Bangladesh thing, we're making a book about that, and I'm writing the text at the moment, so it's on Advaita Acharya. So exactly the same topic comes up, where his name is Advaita. He's non-different. He's non-different. Prabhupada explains, yes, Achincha Beda Beda Tattva. So then Advaita Acharya is described as a most compassionate person. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his purports to the Chaitanya Bhagavat, is describing most compassionate person, because the quality of his compassion is very great. And then you think, yeah, well, he made the Supreme Lord appear, but anyway, they're one in a sense. Vishnu Tattva is one, right? One and different. So they are unique, separate personalities with their own nature and their own mood, and yet non-different. For example, the Sringadev, we could go to Krishna for protection, but then, because Krishna does protect. But one reason to go to Lord Nisringadev for protection is because Lord Nisringadev, he is Well, externally, the most voracious, right? Vajranaga, Vajratamstra, you know, like these heavy thunderbolt nails and teeth. And in his golden manes, right, there's drops of blood. And then, of course, the garland of intestines and so on, it's like intense. Huh? But the main feature of Lord Nrisimhadev is that he is the personification of soft-heartedness. Because it is out of his soft-heartedness towards Prahlad that he took the voracious form. So he's not voracious, he's soft-hearted. That is ferocious. Voracious means you eat a lot, and ferocious means you are like that. Yeah, so. So they have their individual personality, and that's the way the Lord arranged it. And there's nothing more that we can say about it. This is the way the Lord has designed it. This is the design of the Lord. We can't ask why, you know? Why? Because the Lord has done it. He has reasons, you know. In his original form, he stays in Vrindavan, Vrindavan, and Parijayamam. Napadam ekam nagacchati. Never take one step out of Vrindavan, that he does. But, in his expansions, he deals with certain things. Krishna doesn't bother with killing the demons, that's his expansions. I do such things. But one personality. But that's his. Okay, the second and last.
Can we say that his mood takes a form?
His mood takes a form. We are thinking linear. You know, our minds are linear. Always thinking one thing comes first and the other thing comes next. Whereas the transcendental reality is eternal. So, it's all there. All these forms are there. It's not like he takes, yes, sometimes. So, which was first? The chicken or the egg kind of question. Right? Which was first? We think linear, but in the eternal realm, everything is in cycles. It's eternal. And sometimes manifesting, sometimes not manifesting. So, Nrisimhadev is eternal. So, but sometimes the Lord, again, desires to act out these pastimes. Gets in that mood. Alright. Thank you so much. It was nice to be with you. I will sort of get ready to leave soon. And for a while I will not travel so much, so I will not, because you know, how much can one travel? I liked Maharaj's point yesterday that I said, like, when he was younger, he thought that surrender meant to physically exhaust yourself. Oh, I'm just slowly getting there to the point where I realize I gotta stop doing this. So I'm gonna travel a little less, so I may not see everyone in all the places where you're staying. So for a while, so it was nice to see you. And hope to meet you somewhere, sometime, soon.